What's up, everybody? Welcome to Declarations of War Podcast, episode 81. We're getting close to that 100, baby. This is your host, Alexei Avkard, joined today by my co-host, Ninja Turtle.
Hey, guys.
And filling in for Ali Ross, Noir FC, and Financier Kingblade.
Yo, yo.
And our special guest, oh, God, I should have asked him how to pronounce this ahead of time. Why not Yob?
Hey, Yob.
Hey, Yob. He's the executor of Obsidian Front. Say hi.
Hi, Yob.
Ali could not join us. We were also hoping to get the executor of Brave Newbies, but he could not join us either. He may pop in at some point in the middle of the show. If he does, we'll bring him on into the discussion. Meantime, time for some shout-outs. Of course, I got to give my love to Obsidian Front. Those guys were awesome for this past week. A shout-out to Scumdot, who beat us in the Alliance Tournament. Spoiler alert, I guess. But those guys were really classy, and it was a really tough competitive match. And looking forward to the next weekend. I want to give a hi to them. And speaking of the next weekend, finally, a shout to Sleeper Social Club, who are kind enough to give us an extra day of scrimming in the middle of the week. King?
My shout-outs go to Noir proper. You guys have done a great job getting prepared for the Alliance Tournament, those who are AT eligible, and you guys have been giving it your all, and my hat's off to everyone.
Alliance Tournament seems to be the flavor of the week this week or month, I suppose. But I want to give a big shout-out to null-sec.com. If you were watching the stream at all, Fozzy gave us a little introduction to it, I guess, because it is a tool I'd never really heard of before. But honestly, it is everything the tournament tool should have been in the past and should be now. And once you can sync up the voices of the commentators to that null-sec front end and actually be able to watch the tournament under your own power, I guess, it will be like a way better experience. So check that out if you haven't. It might get you interested in the tournament.
Why not?
I'm going to shout out Dead Terrorist for reforming and Petroleum for bringing us content every night. And along with the front members, who's pulling a heavy load at the moment.
And of course, much love for our sponsor, Eve Time Code. They've been with us a long time now. EveTimeCode.com, where your business counts. You get a free Plex for every $250 you spend. And they accept Bitcoins heartily. So go there, help them out. They really give a lot of support to the community, a lot of community websites. So, you know, if you're buying Plex, that's the place to do it. You're really giving back to the entire community when you do. Poll results discussion. Somehow I forgot to put one up. Really thought I did. So rip. Hashtag fuck polls. Let's move right into the news. A lot of stuff has been happening. There's a new coalition out there. Of sorts. It is the Battlement Coalition. And its core, I guess, is Mortis Angels, aka MOA. But mostly it's like a Gur Goons coalition from what I'm able to figure out.
Yeah, I'd not really heard anything about these dudes before I glanced at something on the Mitanni.com, and that was, well, I guess spun, wow. to say the least.
So it's the fullest thing is Mortis Angels, Mortus, not to be confused, that's a Russian alliance. Triumvirate, some guys called Negative Waves, never heard of them. Intrepid Crossing, Ineluctable Bloodline, Serenity Initiative, Usurper Dot, Scourge Dot, Vanguard Dot, Psychotic Alliance, Unkind Initiative, and Never Look Back. I guess? Okay. I mean, They're doing some stuff. They're mostly focusing on Cloud Ring right now. Word is that they've reinforced some CMC towers and provoked a response, but I think for the most part, things have been low-key, and their real activity hasn't really ramped up yet. CFC's been making fun of them because their, like, flagship coalition meeting was centered around a PowerPoint presentation, which I guess they felt was a little try-hard. I don't know. That's not that bad. The quote from someone on Reddit is, "We have met the enemy, and he has badly formatted PowerPoint slides. They have evolved beyond Microsoft Excel. They have become PowerPoint." Apparently they haven't gotten any significant objectives that I've heard about, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on. A lot of those alliances don't really get along normally, they're just sort of getting together to fight the common enemy and try to disrupt the somewhat stagnant situation in Nelsec by trying to get a little content off Goonsorn.
And it's not like a small group of people either. It's not like, you know, just two or three of these alliances. Like, some of these alliances actually represent a fair number of people. Like this Mortus, these Russian guys, I never heard of them before, but they have almost 400 members in their alliance, you know? So, like, if you could push, like, 1,000 active people in this alliance, you could actually probably do something in Nullsec to some effect.
The thing is, I think it's not going to be as dramatic an effect as these alliances are hoping, because a lot of these alliances are familiar players to Goonswarm. Like, Triumvirate, Mortus Angels, and Mortus have been living in, like, XX7 and Venal and Pureblind in various parts for a long time now. Like, Goonswarm is kind of used to them, kind of dealing with them. I think the wild card is, like, groups like Intrepid Crossing coming in and adding their weight to what those guys are already doing. But I don't really... I mean, they're trying to brand it as, like, this entirely new initiative, but it just reads like more of the same people in NPC, Pureblind, trying to strike out at... Or, excuse me, Pureblind and Venal trying to strike out at the CFC. Which is something that, frankly, they're used to dealing with, because groups have been doing it for years. That said, who knows? Maybe they'll get enough numbers behind them to actually change the dynamic a little bit. If they do, we will definitely be telling you about it. But to switch away from the north, going down south, there have been some movement in the Providence borders. Brave Newbies and the entire Hero Coalition that they hit up has been clashing with Pravico. We've talked about it a little bit. But before, when we talked about it, we were mostly framing it in like a... it's just a border skirmish type situation. But I think it's become clear over the past 2 weeks that things have seriously been escalating. They have been scrapping pretty hard. SOV systems are changing hands. Right now, most of the fighting is centered on what CVA refers to as Greater Providence, what most people refer to as Ketch. There are border systems, basically, like ZQ, UL-, BR-Tech-N, IS-R, that CVA usually claims for security, but they say security reasons to control their access to their borders. Brave's not having any of that, and they are fighting. And SOV is dropping. It's dropped right now as I'm looking at it in UL Tech 7. And that's probably just going to keep going. I don't see Brave giving up on this, because they're really the only viable target for Brave to go after right now. And Providence is too proud and too predictable to do anything but defend their systems with everything they've got. So this conflict is going to keep going until it stops keeping going, I think. King, you have a lot of experience in Providence. What's your read?
I agree with what you're saying, honestly and truly. I think that you know, Brave is making a push, and I think Providence, you know, the Pravi block will try to force it out to keep their space. They've been ousted once before, well, more than once, but they always come back, and I think that even these little border incursions will be met with a lot of force, because they want to establish themselves as a "don't fuck with my space."
Yeah, that's not really going so well.
Didn't say it was going to go well. I just said that's what they're going to do.
Everybody fucks with Providence because they know that they can. But, you know, it's I think it's a situation that's really good for everybody involved, right?
I agree, like, but I also think that Providence also offers something very unique in Eve, and that's is that's 0-0 that with that SOV claimable that you can play out of. You can go there, you can rat, you can do your things that you normally can't do in other 0-0 without renting. So I part of me says yeah. But pardon me, I like the, what's the word I'm looking for?
Pizzazz.
Yeah, the pizzazz of it, the oomph to it. You know, their thought.
Showboatiness.
No.
You make it sound like a bad thing.
It's definitely a spot where the most people go to, I mean, just to get random fights. I mean, you meet a lot of new guys mixed with older guys, and a lot of these down there is actually takeable, even for small fleets, and I can only imagine that's why Brave Newbies is fighting over the area down there, because it's fightable. It's not big doctrines with the United Fleet. You see,
yeah. Yeah, there's good hunting opportunities, there's good skirmish fights, and I agree.
The geography of Providence also kind of lends itself to that, even if CVA didn't control it. It's just got that, it's a good mixture of, like, pipes and loops and lots of different ways to go in and out, high sec, low sec, etc. So it's really convenient to roam into, and always will be.
Kitchen sink as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, that's another thing. I don't know how much we want to slam on the CVA coalition, but they don't really enforce doctrines very well, and, you know, some of their defense fleets are hit or miss. So you have a really interesting grab bag. It's not like if you go up to Goonswarm, you know, like by the time you hit a certain system, they're going to have remote sensor boosted Ashimus with interdictors, and, you know, you're just going to lose your interceptor, lose your scout, unless you run a huge fleet through. Providence, it's like you could ride around and pick people off for like 2 hours, or you could get in there and immediately be reported in their security channels and have to hightail out of there with like all these screaming mad Providence residents right at your heels. It's unpredictable, it's exciting, sometimes you fight it, sometimes you have to run from it, sometimes you're going in and getting ganks, occasionally you'll go in and get nothing, but that's pretty rare. The other thing that's going on, I don't know if this is going to be a developing story or not, but I did check the map. There was a massive number of kills on the other side of Ketch between, well, it looks like everybody. There were kills from Brave, AAA, Pravi Block, NCDOT, and Goonswarm all down there. So I don't know what was going on today / yesterday, but it must have been fun. And it looked like it was going on for about 10 hours. Hopefully we'll get the story for that eventually.
You talking about that, the GE, the GE fight? Oh, yeah.
So we were hoping to have Licton on, who's the executor of Brave, could not make it. But we will try to get him on the podcast sometime soon to talk about events in Providence. And who knows? Noir has a history of being hired in Providence-related conflicts. Maybe we'll be again. We'll be able to give you a first-hand perspective.
Yeah, Licton, if you're listening to this, I am disappointed. We got so drunk together at FanFest, I thought we had a bond.
Can't you hear the heartbreak, Licton? Can't you feel it?
I hear it.
But anyway, yeah. We'll try to reschedule him and see if we can get him on here for the next show or the one after that or sometime. He's the executor of one of the largest alliances in the game. You know, he's going to be a good person to get on the show, so we're going to keep trying.
Yeah, he's a genuinely nice person to talk to. Very interested in what he's doing.
Obviously, summer happened. We know. We're not going to talk about it in news. We're going to bring it up toward the end for the CSM corner, which will be a little different since Allie's not here, but I still think there's enough public information to talk about it. And finally, an event that happened today. Not much information has come out about it, but I figure we talk about it a little bit. Eve was subjected to some DDoS attacks. There's rumor that it's related to the summer situation. I don't know if there's any truth to that or if it's just like tinfoil hatting, but it is sort of convenient. Summer's characters were banned earlier today and then coincidentally happened to get a DDoS attack on the server a couple hours afterward.
Don't think it's related. There's a site where they're randomly DDoSing random games all day long.
So, yeah, I saw a Twitter handle that claimed responsibility for like a bunch of attacks today on Eve and like NCSoft servers, so the four people there that were affected, and just like a bunch of other sites. So the Eve's the actual server is up. It's been up. The launcher server's been down, which if you went to the security presentation at FanFest this year, it's they'll bring down services to mitigate these kind of attacks and stuff. So I don't know if that was, like, them just keeping it down, or if this is, like, legitimately an attack that actually brought down the launcher for an extended period of time. And since you can't, it kind of sucks, to be honest. And it's like a really shitty design flaw in how they're doing this. But the launcher server now is necessary to patch. You can't patch out of the bin EXE anymore, which is a huge problem because now the launcher goes from like a mitigating shield against DDoS attacks to completely essential to updating and running the game. So, like, this is probably going to be a pain in the ass in the future. Sorry, that's my rant about that.
It sounds like it. I mean, this wouldn't be the first time that some random dude has decided to target EVE Online. It happens. Whatever it was there pretty quick. I just used the launcher a few minutes ago. So it went, like, what? Not even a full day? Not even a full half day?
Yeah, there was a period, probably, I think, maybe 4 to 6 hours where the launcher was down, at least. You know, and so that's a pretty reasonable period of time to expect that maybe CCP had it down to mitigate the attack or, you know, whatever they're doing. But no, it's a shitty design flaw that you can't update from the bin anymore because they've been getting DDoSed for years now, and if the launcher is going to go down for periods of hours even, like, that's hours now that people can't update and play the game if they patched the night before. And if this little scrub, because this dude didn't sound like he was anything hot shit, so if this little scrub actually brought down the launcher server for 6 hours, like, somebody that actually really wanted to screw with them probably could now.
Always a risk.
Well, I hope that CCP has the transparency to come out and say, you know, what happened, how long the actual attack lasted, and, you know, what they did as far as as far as mitigating the damage and protection of and just protection of their servers and things like that. I think that'll lend credibility to them as well as put the masses at ease, especially those who are in network security and things like that, or, you know, who see this and go and are flipping out, you know.
Well, they usually are pretty good about it, although I think the head of CCP security has changed hands since the last time this sort of thing happened. So it's a ship with a new captain. We'll see how they handle it.
Yeah.
I'd bet you within the next 48 hours you'd probably see something. I haven't really seen people freaking out about it. Like, the most commotion I saw it cause was people that didn't realize that you could launch EVE through the bin and or your bin folder and not, like, have to go through the launcher. So all these cries of EVE is down, EVE is down, and there's, like, you know, 15,000 people on the server playing right now. They're getting pretty good at this kind of shit, to be honest, because it's happening more and more.
Mm-hmm.
I also think you'll see a change in the way that the launcher works and the patcher works, just for this kind of, you know, because this vulnerability was exposed. I think we might see the ability to patch through the bin.
I can't remember offhand if there's a working repair tool, like, in the folder by default for your Tranquility install, but that might actually be something as I think of it in retrospect. But, like, yeah, making patching dependent on that launcher server is not a good redundancy.
All right, and moving on to contract wrap-up. Alliance Tournament. Everybody on the podcast is dying to talk about it, and it was definitely the thing going on last weekend. Obviously, no statistics about viewership are out, but everybody I know was watching the tournament with great anticipation.
It was the place to get wrecked this last weekend.
It was a great tournament, man. I mean, so far, I think we've seen more diversity of teams than any year.
Really?
Yeah, obviously I had no Imperial data about that whatsoever, but it seemed like every match was something different. There wasn't a drone meta that was constantly dominating, there wasn't a Tinker meta that was constantly dominating, there wasn't a Rush meta that was constantly dominating. I think the only thing we didn't really see was like a Kiting Missile team do very well. But everybody else was pretty interesting and pretty diverse, I thought.
Yeah, go ahead, why not?
I was just going to see how, as we saw Dommies last year, I'll see Yezzes this year, so.
Well, they upped the points cost on the Dommy and the Ishtar, so most teams were not fielding them. They still saw some play, but it seemed like most teams were not willing to make the trade-off in points.
No, the Galente meta definitely fell into ships like the Eos, the Vexor Navy issue. We saw a couple combos of, like, Vindicator Mega Navies, but yeah, the Oniros was a really popular Logi.
Well, it always will be, because it's, quote, the solo Logi. The Guardian really only does well when it has Cap Partner. which it can't have. Or yeah, it can have, but it's a really big sacrifice.
I think we saw maybe two or three Guardians this last weekend, and all those teams lost, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I definitely think drones are the meta this year, though. They really are, with the drone changes.
Well, it's a slightly different. It's not the Sentry drone meta.
Well, that's just
necessarily. It's a lot more diverse in like a subgenre.
It really is like an overall drone meta.
Yeah, I'm not saying that it's a Sentry drone meta. I just mean that this Alliance tournament, from pretty much every match I've seen, it's basically been a lot of drone heavy comps. Now there have been a lot of diversity in what drones are fielded, but again, it is just a drone heavy meta, and I think that's great because drones for the longest time were the stepchild of Eve. It was just like, oh, put drones on it.
I'm actually surprised we haven't seen more bombers this year like we have in some of the former years.
Maybe I don't think we've seen any.
Yeah, there were a couple teams that brought bombers, but the problem is it's just impossible to keep alive, so they just get removed instantly. Because they realistically do pose a pretty big threat. They do have great damage projection, and if you can get the range right, you can use a bomb, which is super detrimental to the overriding drone meta. So, yeah, bombers don't last long on field ever.
Yeah, I mean, especially in a drone meta, because drones track, like, ridiculously good on bombers.
And
that exacerbates that thin tank that they already have.
I'll go so far as to say that there isn't really a Sentry drone meta in this tournament so far, because a lot of the matches we've seen where drone comps lose, it's because they're using sentries at an inappropriate time. Sentries where they can't track, or sentries where they can't project damage, or enough damage, say, versus a flight of heavies. There's also, like, some of the ship choices, things like Vexor Navy issues don't have a lot of room. If they're carrying things like sentries or heavies, they only have room for one flight, you know, so you don't have replacements. So you have to make a choice then at that point to what drone you're going to go with. And the ships, I think we've seen the ships that can be versatile, ships like the Ishtar, ships like the Rattlesnake, they've definitely pushed the drone meta forward because of that versatility. They can bring lights and heavies and sentries and actually react to different comps that they come up against.
Yeah, and I think a lot of teams that have gone with that one trick pony of just running like an all gecko, you know, all geckos in their VNIs have found themselves on the losing end of the stick more often than the winning end of the stick because they don't have that ability to change out to a medium or a light flight. A one ship that I think is huge, and I see it watching the matches, I saw it banned out quite a bit, and then when it wasn't banned out, both sides tend to use it if they were going with the drone comp, which was the Gila. I think that thing was just, it's proven itself to be an absolute amazing drone boat for damage projection, along with heavy missiles. You know, you can put a scram on it. I mean, you can tank it very well. I mean, it just does a lot of things very well. And I think going into week two, you're going to see that banned a lot more.
You know, it's a lot like the Sleipnir. It reminds me a lot of the Sleipnir in a tournament context. The damage application is fast. The ship itself isn't as fast as the Sleipnir, but those medium drones that it has can fly in the target really quick. It has enough drone bay to select damage. Like, you can have literally two of each kind of drone. Medium drone. So you're always hitting for the best damage. And it's tough. It's tough as hell. It's got a resist bonus, which reminds me a little bit of the ASB bonus on the Sleipnir. So it has a lot of those things in common. And the Sleipnir itself is still seeing some play, but not nearly as much. I think you're right that the Gila and, to a limited extent, the Eos are sort of replacing that. Although the Eos, I don't think, has done as well as people thought it would, the people that put it on the team. It's seeing a lot of play, but not as many victories.
We've seen a couple good Sleipnir teams, like actually the match between Surely You're Joking and Almost Awesome was like towards the end of Sunday. The Surely You're Joking brought us to a double Sleipnir team like that against what was kind of another shield team, but it really shows, like, you have to be able to willing to use those Sleipnirs, because they're basically two different team comps. I mean, with those Gilas, you can actually pull range, you can project. Those Sleipnirs have to basically be on what you want them to be on, or they're not doing anything other than just soaking up damage. And it was a fight that Surely almost lost, actually, until they got those Sleipnirs on top of what they needed to be on and started bringing stuff down. But yeah, the Gilas are an insane projection. We've seen that this year. The Worms, too. The triple Worm combo, having those 12 points or whatever it is, insane amount of DPS. I mean, 800, 900 DPS, and you can throw those things on top of Logi at 4K a second with micro warps, and those Logi go down more often than not. It's really proving to be a popular base to the Frigg support wing that most of the winning teams are bringing.
I want to say that and the Mollus sensor damps seem to be the overarching ECM of choice in this Alliance tournament.
Although, you know what,
I don't think that's new, though.
No,
that's not new, but I want to point out, like, teams that have chosen to field tracking disruptors have done so to great effect. Like, they almost always win their matches, the teams that elect to go tracking disruptor over damp. It's just a pattern I noticed. I think a lot of people underappreciate the damage mitigation, especially if you control the bans, and you maybe ban out, say, the Gila, which is a missile and drone ship, so you're going to be assured that your opponents are going to field at least some turret ships. I think it works out pretty well.
Yeah, I guess to counter your point, though, is that tracking disruptors don't do anything against drone comps. In all reality, if I'm fielding, you know, Gila's worms, I've got rocket worms, I've got heavy missile Gilas, and I've got I'm just basically boating over and just dropping, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 DPS worth of drones. It doesn't really matter what your tracking disruptors do. Whereas sensor damps force people into, sensor damps force the Gilas to put themselves out of that safety zone and put themselves more into the line of fire. Same thing with the worms. That's why I think the sensor damps in this situation is becoming a stronger choice in this Alliance tournament.
Damps have always been the go-to, though. I mean, it's been like that for probably 3 or 4 years now. Just you got 20 points, let's fill them with Mollusses. Molly. Yeah.
Mollies.
Mollies, whatever. Fozzie knows all the plurals for everything.
It probably is Molly, I think.
Mollusses.
Yeah, but there's definitely... We've seen, I think probably this year, less so than last year, actual true Tinker teams. The 5, 6, maybe 7-man teams with high-value point ships relying on a Tinker setup, because those are getting deconstructed really fucking fast this year. Like, really fast. There's very few instances of those teams doing well.
Well, there was one this year that was just amazing. I think everyone thought they would lose the match. I can't remember who it was. It showed up with Gollum and what else it was. Tinker is remote red, of course.
Yeah, there was also an armor Tinker team, which did remarkably well.
That was the Waffle match.
That was the Waffles match.
And that one, I want to give mad props to Waffles, because I honestly thought at the beginning of that match that Waffles was done from the get-go.
So we still lost, but just not as badly as you thought.
Yeah.
Well, I think people took one look at the setup and just wrote them off like they had no chance whatsoever. I think they really, you know, stood up and said, hey, this actually could work, and we're going to make the most of it. And they did pretty well.
Yeah, it was a tough setup to come up against. I mean, just so much damage. But, yeah, I don't know what the primary calls were like, but they didn't really seem super... Ooh, food is here. Super great to me, but, whatever. Yeah, it's, I will say that they practiced a shit ton, and, basically everything they did was done in extreme secrecy, so what you saw is what I saw is what everybody that wasn't on the team saw.
Now, speaking of being on the team and seeing things, IFC'd our fleet and take full responsibility for us getting our asses kicked. It wasn't that bad. The match is actually pretty close, a lot closer than the score would have you think. It really turned on a knife's edge. It was 10 minutes of positioning because... We had done research on Scum, our opponents, and we realized that they do two things almost every time. They run a triple Typhoon setup, they run the same Typhoon fit, and the other thing is they always dive their support wing. They always send the support wing ahead, like every single match that we could find of theirs. So, you know, we figured, okay, well, we could take a generic setup and have a really hard time against these Typhoons, which were super brick tank torpedo Typhoons with tackle and newts. Like, really, really scary. Or we could prep for the typhoon thing and come up with a setup that's purely designed to kill it. We decided to go with the second one, and then they showed up with not the typhoons. They showed up with a double nightmare and a massive support wing that they did not send ahead. So we didn't really know how to handle the setup. So both teams were... I don't think they knew how to handle our setup either. So both teams were just kind of staring at each other from across the thing. We got to a jump beacon, and then they pulled further away out of range of the jump beacon. They went to another jump beacon, we went to another jump beacon, they went back, we went back. Finally, match time was about to run out, and they jumped ahead of us. And I figured we'd just roll the dice now that it was coming down to time. We had a higher attack bar, higher potential damage, and figured that if they were jumping their team in and we were rushing forward, we might have the edge with them being slightly disoriented, so we'll just go for it. It didn't quite work out with the advanced speed up of time die, which like you can't train for on duality because there's no way to turn it on. But basically, after if there's a tie in points at the end of the tournament time, instead of slowing speed down, it speeds the server up. First it's like 1.5 times, and I think it gradually increases to about 5 times. Basically, our frigates were getting popped so fast that our logistics pilot could not even like come close to catching them. So our entire tackle wing died, and it left our big, slow battleships pretty much sitting there. It also meant that their logistics ship, I think, made a piloting error and came in about 5 kilometers off the battleships. And I didn't notice him for like 2 or 3 seconds in real time, but in server time, it was like 15 seconds. So he was putting all these reps on the targets we were shooting, and we didn't switch over fast enough. So that was the two key things. We probably should have taken our chances and been a little more aggressive earlier on. I thought we would have the edge in a sped-up time situation. Obviously, that was a miscalculation because we totally did not.
Well, I think the one thing that we can take away from that match is that in the future, in a time advanced situation like that, lead with the big bulky battleships, which is easier for the logistics to keep alive, and then let the support wing kind of kite around the side. But
I don't think you want to go into that like that. That reverse tie-dye is something I think you'd want to avoid, to be honest.
I would this time around. I've never taken something to time ever again.
Within 2 minutes, it's advanced too fast for like your logic to react on anything smaller than a battlecruiser. I mean, that's just realistically what it is. It's not a situation you want to get yourself into, especially if you're up against another brawly team. Like, as a brawly team, it's not a situation you want to be in.
Agree completely.
It's when you get to that point, I think we've seen in almost every match this week, last weekend, when you get to that point in time, something happens and somebody just gets rickrolled. Like, one side just gets pile-drived.
It's like a coin flip at that point.
Basically.
Question, those jump beacons have never been in the last tournaments before. Is that a benefit or a fault?
I think it adds an interesting tactical dimension. I don't know. I think it makes things a little difficult for newer teams, because at least I know that it makes you second guess. And a lot of your pilots want to do it, and then half the pilots are like not sure if they trust it. And then like it's just another level of complexity for people to squabble over and overthink things sometimes. So I think they're detracting in that way. But tactically, I like the flexibility they bring to the arena, and I like that it adds a little bit of terrain. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, they definitely add like a hilarity factor to the whole thing.
Yeah, when someone micro jumps out of 100 kilometers out of the arena.
Specifically when 2 rattlesnakes do it and then lose the match.
Exactly. Yeah, choke point and Quebec United Legion was probably my biggest fail of the last weekend. It was a match that literally choke point had in hand, and they just decided to jump 2 rattlesnakes out in quick succession.
It wasn't even that quick. Like, I don't know why they didn't stop the other one from going.
which we can start putting our tinfoil hats on and say, were they paid?
Mm. Probably not, because I think that both those alliances are kind of broke. But I have no idea. Anyway, our next match is going to be against Fearless Empire, who lost to Rogue Capel in pretty steamrolly fashion. I think that match was much more of a squash than ours was. And, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. I feel pretty good, but I also felt pretty good about the match we just had, so now I'm not sure how to trust that feel.
I definitely think they need to come up with a new concept. I mean, the Slepnir and missiles together. I don't know how they persisted that would work. In the last
well, they seem to go with like a standard Mimitar Rush comp. It looked like a pretty standard thing, like you would see from last year or the year before that. Mostly the year before that. But it just got... I think one of the problems with going with a cookie cutter setup like that, a traditional setup like that, is yes, it's proven reliable. Like, it's a proven viable setup. But it's also a setup that everyone at this point knows how to handle. Like, there's no surprise or uncertainty there.
Didn't they have three caracals and three worms? I mean, how are they going to support the Slipnirs? That's what I don't get around.
Yeah, it was three Slipnirs, a Simi, three caracals, and a Frigg filled up with a Frigg support wing.
And obviously I mean, caracals were supposed to be anti-frigate.
If you watch that match, too, like, it's a little unfair to kind of judge them on their first match on Sunday, because Rote had that green bar, what is it, supports or whatever it's called?
Control,
thank you. They had a control bar that was probably about six times the size of Fearless's because of the number of dams they have, and they really just forced them to a point where they had to charge on, and they could just nuke off those Caracals and those Frigs so easily.
Yeah, true enough.
Yeah, it'll be good, though. The double elimination is a cool format, because unlike previous years where even if we won our second match, we wouldn't advance, this time around, if we do win our second match, we will advance. So that's kind of a cool motivator for us.
Yeah,
definitely helped us. Definitely helped us last year. I mean, we lost the first match and we played, what, more? Six matches after that?
Yeah, it's a harder road. You have way more matches to go through if you're in the loser's bracket, but at least you're still in it.
Yeah, at least you can still play like two or three if you lose your first one. You know, you're not just out, because that's kind of meh. But let's talk about the winner's bracket before we...
Yeah, go for it.
Move on. I don't know. I'm excited for a couple of matches. Shadow Cartel and Pandemic Legion, obviously, is going to be... Like, holy shit. Agony Empire is coming up against Red vs. Blue. One of the things we didn't talk about was Code, who was originally scheduled to play against Red vs. Blue, just decided to no-show. So they were kicked from the tournament, banned from future tournaments, as I'm told. And so now... Agony Empire, a pretty tested tournament team, is going up against Red vs. Blue, who has yet to fight a match in the tournament so far. So, I don't know. What do you guys think? Is it going to matter that they haven't played a match so far? I think it will.
Oh, I think it plays a huge factor.
I gotta think it does too, because it's just bottling up that pressure and that anticipation. And I think at this point, they'll be so overthinking everything. And they're going into it fresh, whereas their opponents are going to have a couple matches under their belt. I think it's definitely an advantage to their opponents.
Well, that, and I think Agony has been in several previous Alliance tournaments, done very well. So, as far as I know, their core, without going back and really looking at it, I really think that Agony's probably got a really solid core of Alliance Tournament pilots who have a lot of experience. And just like in any other kind of competitive scene or competitive situation, teams with players that have experience tend to do better than teams with, you know, it's their first foray into it. I mean, just think about it. If you're in football terms, if you're going to the Super Bowl, and this is your first Super Bowl you've ever been to, and you're going up against a team that won the Super Bowl last year and the year before, there's a lot more anticipation on your end because it's the first time that you're doing it.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I know how much we were shaking last year as more or less new guys in the Alliance tournament. I mean, Agony does have a few years behind.
But you always have to ask, is it the same team? Is it the same captain? are they going, and, you know, how is the meta change going to impact them? Like, they may have played previous tournaments, but previous tournaments under a different meta.
Yes, I agree, but I think what it comes down to at the end of the day, I don't think the meta is so much the deciding factor as the person sitting in front of the keyboard. If they've been in this situation and they know the limits of the boundary limits, if they have experience in flying in that tight of an arena and keeping themselves alive, I think that lends a lot more benefit than a meta change that may be not to their benefit, because let's say they're not as effective, let's say, flying drone boats, but they're really good at flying mini rush comps. But the fact that they can do it means that I think it gives them an advantage.
But on the other hand, I also think that the new setup with the jump beacons is probably a bit stressful for the captain if they haven't trained with it proper or whatever. I mean, that could be a stretch factor, that the arena and the battlefield is totally different from what they're used to.
Well, it definitely adds that extra element to, like, your positioning, and if you watch some of the best teams and how they're performing this year so far, positioning is everything, and how you keep certain ships where and how you move them. It's something that you need to be good at the tournament, but it definitely adds that extra oompa to it. But yeah, Agony's been around for a while, and so much of how you do in the tournament is kind of based on, like, your run and how you go, who you play, the meta that you see, and how you see your meta evolving. They came up against what I would actually kind of describe as a pretty weak Circle of Two team their last match. It was a 3 Typhoon Oneros with a Frig Wing setup, and positioning here, Circle of Two, they let the Vindicator and Mega Navy get on their Foons, and it was over. They lost a positioning war. But honestly, I think we see those jump beacons backfire more than we see them successfully work. I would have to say. I've seen more. There was one match I saw where multiple members of the team were able to use it to, like, good effect. Everyone else has just been, like, flying out of the arena and dying.
Alright, Cass, moving on.
Wait. I got one little more tidbit for you, Alex.
Hurry.
So here's the good news. The loser of Shadow Cartel and Pandemic Legion, it goes on to play the winner of your next match against Fearless Empire, so...
Hooray!
Have fun with that.
I hope we get PL out of the two of them, to be honest.
Implying PL would lose.
No, just like, I've been talking to Elise Randolph about the tournament a lot, and it would just be a really interesting match for me to try to FC against them. Not that it won't be interesting against Shadow Cartel, I just haven't been talking to Shadow Cartel in prep for the tournament. Alright, so that's where things stand. Moving on to this week in Mercs. There's really only one story worth talking about in my book. Marmite Collective, Deck Noir again. They reinforced our Pokos, and they sent out an alliance-wide mail stating that, oh, we're going to go mess with the Noir's Pokos. Quote, revenge is a bitch. Well, it must be not the only bitch in the house, because they didn't show up for the reinforcement timer. Well, we successfully repaired all the Pokos, and there was like 10, 12 Marmites in Uedama, and then they all melted away. It was very disappointing. We even brought Front Why Not's crew into this, because we figured that they would be coming in force. We figured that they'd be running around with their little crew that they've been building, trying to get some neutral remote reps. That's the intel that we had. Nope, not even close.
Well, at least they brought us 600 new targets, so we can't complain. A lot of people paying for this. We didn't have to pay anything.
Yeah, why don't you talk a little bit about that? What happened?
Well, we decided to assist you, and Troy came with me straight away to ask what this was all about, and he got a bit pissed off about it, I think. So the day after, we had 70 war decks on our hands from every single Merc Corp, more or less, in your team area, so it's going to be fun. We've had fun with them lately. There's only one of the Merc Corps actually fighting us at the moment, and they're putting up some really good fights, and we're having fun with them.
Which one is that?
Forsaken, what are they called? Forsaken Ansel, what are they called?
Forsaken, yeah.
They're actually putting up some good fights, and we're having quite a lot of fun with them.
I have his combo on hand. Turtle, we could do the planned masterclass on like tournament meta, or we could do a dramatic reading of Toru Bushida going fucking nuts.
We could do dramatic reading. I'm feeling good.
Yeah, I think that's good.
We'll talk about tournament meta next week when it's all kind of done.
Yeah, okay. So that's what we're doing. And finally, our last like substantive story, Summergate, again. Like nearly exactly a year after the original summer RMTing fiasco, it's back from the dead. Summer was caught with a promotional situation where they would, if you bought a Plex, you would get like a Plex credit that you could then trade in for, was it like 40, 50 mil above the value of the Plex that you bought? Basically a way to RMT, I think it was like $19.99 for a billion ISK or something like that when it all worked out. Yeah, not cool. And there was a big kerfuffle over it. The CSM got involved pretty quickly. It was brought to CCP's attention pretty quickly. Apparently, there was some communication between the Somer crew and a representative from CCP, but it wasn't like the community staff or someone that really knew the game very well. It was like the VP of marketing who was on top of that pretty new. And she didn't understand like the nuances of the EVE economy and what prices were and all that kind of stuff. And so it's believed that it was just kind of slipped in like that. Once the people that actually knew what was going on in the game got a hold of things, they were very upset at what was going on. An investigation was launched. Somerset Mom put the correspondence he had with CCP on a public forum on top of that, which is against the EULA. And, well, to make a long story short, CCP Falcon and his community team put in like a 20-hour day, 22-hour day, and the program is shut down, and all of Summer's accounts are now banned. So
there is also a 36-page thread knot of very calm discussion, well-mannered posts. It's really fucking bizarre. What's happening?
So I don't have so much a problem of the RMTing thing. I have a problem with, like, the way Somerset initially pitched his new program was that it was, like, CCP-approved kind of thing. In other words, he could do it, no one else can. And I think if CCP is ever going to open up the ISK flow to go out of the game instead of just in, like, you can buy a Plex and sell it, but you can't sell your ISK for money. If they ever do allow that, it can't be, you know, like a pick-a-winner kind of thing where they pick one person and give them all the power, give them the monopoly over it. It's going to have to be open to everyone. And there are very compelling reasons for them to never do that at all. For players that are unfamiliar with the issue, if CCP were to do that, they would suddenly be subject to all kinds of financial regulations, like a bank almost, which would impose lots of costs and restrictions on them that they really would not like to deal with. So if it's at all possible for them not to do that, they're not gonna. Now this, of course, has resulted in Summer Blink shutting down entirely. I guess that's a bummer for people that really enjoyed it. I have played Summer Blink. Occasionally I won some stuff on Summer Blink. I'm personally not going to miss it hugely, but I do know some people that, like, that's almost all they did every day, was just play Blinks constantly.
Yeah, it was definitely a popular service. I think the way, though, that Falcon laid it out made it really clear. And pretty self-explanatory, because there were, even if you, like, don't look at the RMT thing, there were a couple things that he did that were in breach of the EULA. And we've actually seen people get banned before, like that approved by CCP thing, that's come up on this podcast before, I don't even remember what in context, but the saying you're approved by CCP when you're not, being against the EULA, somebody got banned for it.
I think you're going to see quite a few new sites open up and do something similar now. I mean, a lot of people have been using it to, well, sitting on a Titan or whatever, playing Summer Banks, just waiting there. A lot of people have been using it. I've been playing it for years. So.
I mean, you already have some micro-lottery sites. One of them even supports this show. EveBet, I think, has some micro-lotteries. Or if they don't, they certainly... A similar site does exist. I've seen it. We actually know, even if it wasn't EveBet, we did have a previous group, I forget the name of them, but they sponsored us for a very short period of time, and they were doing it. It's not the micro-betting that's the problem, these micro-lotteries, these quick lotteries. It's the RMT side of things. If you can just stay away from the temptation to offer an ISK incentive to buy plexes and some kind of like crazy credit transaction thingy, if you can just hold yourself back from doing that, then you can have this site that's going to generate you trillions of ISK, just like taxing people off the betting things. Just be happy with that, people that are running these sites. Just be happy with that for now. I don't know. I think overall, Allie would probably have better perspective on it. Maybe the next time she's on, we'll be able to get a bit of an insider's perspective. But I think from an outsider's perspective, it was handled pretty quickly, pretty smoothly. The community team was very dedicated. The CSM was involved early and often. They had nearly half a dozen meetings about this over the course of, I think, 2 days. Maybe even one day. And they talked to everyone involved, and I think they reached a solution that was probably pretty equitable, and maybe some people think it was a little bit much to ban all of his accounts, but it's not like he only had one thing going on, and it's not like he wasn't already told not to do this kind of thing. So I don't really have a problem with it on that end.
Well, I guess the only thing I would be concerned with is if they... I would say that it would be equitable if they banned all accounts that were pertaining to the Somer Blink scandal. So all of the accounts within that he owned that were within the corporation or handling any of the transactions.
I do believe all his characters are gone. They're not going to hit like people that weren't him because they didn't post things in the forums. You know what I mean? They didn't make this high-level decision. They're certainly not getting real-life money.
Oh, no, no. I agree.
I'm sure they'll keep an eye on them, though.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. Allie came in a bit late, but she was intimately involved in the Summer Blink stuff. So we're going to give her the opportunity to talk a little bit about her role and the CSM's role and what went on. And this is recorded a little bit after the original recording, but we're going to throw it in here for you guys because we think it's important content. So, Allie, take it away.
Hey, guys. So, Summer Blink, obviously, as the story's been going, CSM found out what was going on. People started coming to us and saying, hey, this is worrying. Are you guys aware of this? Do you guys know what's going on? And the answer was, no. So we, CCP players came to us, we came to CCP, and we asked them the exact same question. Hey, do you guys know what's going on? No. So basically what has been happening has been behind the scenes was we told CCP this. They're like, no, we didn't know this was going on. And then, you know, somewhat to our surprise, we find ourselves dragged into meetings again and again and again. You know, you saw all those posts in the forum. CSM had a meeting with CCP. CSM had a meeting with CCP. It was the process working as it ought to work very, very quickly.
Can you go on a little bit about how many meetings you had and what the differences were between them? Like, why so many meetings? What was changing?
Most of what it was, you know, first we came in and we told CCP. We told CCP that stuff was going on. We came in and they, you know, they were at, we came in to ask them, you know, hey, what, you know, hey, what are we, you know, what's going on? And so the first meeting was basically CCP catching us up on you know, this is what we found out so far. And after that, the subsequent meetings were a lot of, you know, oh, well, this is what we found out after that. This is what we found out after that. This is what we found out after that. And that interaction was very positive because we got a chance to, you know, we got a chance to see what was going on. We got a chance to tell CCP what was going on. We got a chance to respond as their investigation developed and help guide CCP as they were doing stuff like putting out statements. It was kind of a really nice flow because you had, oh, you know, CCP comes and meets with us, tells us what's up. We take a look at what the community's saying. We tell CCP what's going on there. We come up with something to say together. We were able to say things like, oh, you know, you all need to say something about this soon because this thing is going to be a problem, or this has gone on, so this is going to be a problem now, and all that. And we got to really work together to deal with the situation, which was, is, I mean, I think, you know, Alex, you might remember that that's a lot of involvement for the CSM.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the process has come a long way, for sure. But I think it'd be more useful, rather than when I was in, than to compare it how the Summer Blink thing worked the last time around, because it was almost 1 year exactly between the last time Summer was an issue. So compare it to that. How was the process to that initial incident?
Most of the difference between that and this process today was the speed of the response. CCP, you know, CCP responded last time, but it took them a little while, and because it took them a little while, the community took a little while to get, you know, to get going and to respond to what was going on. That wasn't as much of a thing this time, this go-around. CCP's The speed of response was different. The CSM involvement was better. And all of that together was a real improvement from our end, if that makes sense.
All right. Do you want to have any closing words before you pull out here?
Good riddance, basically. I mean, I, you know, personally, I looked at this. The old Summer Blink thing was kind of, you know, oh, sure, he's RMTing, that's not very good. He's, you know, this is maybe not very ethical, that kind of sucks. But I didn't have as strong a sense, you know, certainly there were community members who were very angry about it, and my reaction was basically like, yeah, that shouldn't happen, but it's not a super big deal, right? Whereas this go round, you know, dude just straight lied to CCP, and that isn't okay, shouldn't be okay, and he got what was coming to him, is basically my last words there.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and I commend the CSM for their handling the situation. And we'll take you back to the cast. So that's pretty much it. We're going to do a dramatic reading, but first I want to give a plug for our sponsor that is not being banned for RMT. Thank God. EVEBET, eve-bet.com, New Eden's premier betting service. You can bet on the Alliance Tournament, other EVE stuff, real-life sports, esports, all with your ISK. They've handled trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of bets since opening, so they're a service you can trust. And it's not just match betting and stuff like that. They also got, like, blackjacks and slots and stuff. So definitely head on over there. If you believe in Noir, and this is a no-not-believe-in podcast, you will place bets that we will take out the Fearless Empire. And you will not combo me with enrage that I cost you money. Apparently I cost, like, brother Zahariel a billion-isk.
I just want to put it out there on this podcast that I will be putting 2 billion-isk on the match, betting for Noir. So
he's gonna Pete Rose it. Just you watch.
I'm Pete Rose in it, man. They're just not gonna ban me from Eve Alliance tournaments.
It should be a good match one way or the other. Like, you know, we're gonna be playing our hearts out on that one. All right, so I think it would be bad form for me to participate personally in this. So I will let Kingblade and Turtle divide who wants to play Why Not and who wants to play Tora.
It doesn't matter who we are.
Oh, God.
It's what we do that defines us. That's a really horrible Bane, sorry.
Yes, it is.
You have to put your hand over your mouth. You have to do it like this.
I don't really care.
It's actually rather funny. Every time I'm seeing, I have new US guys in my fleet. The first half hour of my fleet, everyone's saying, "What are you saying? Can you repeat? What are you saying?" Well, I'll learn.
All right, why don't we have, since I think it's fair to say that Turtle is the more relaxed of the two of you, let's have Turtle play Why Not. That way Kingblade can play the hyperventilating Tora Bushida.
So you want me to get all crazy?
Well, I'm looking at this, and I can only imagine. Kingblade playing the part of Tora Bushida, and as per our traditions with this, Why Not is not allowed to play himself. And I'm going to try to step out of it as well, because if I do Tora or Why Not, it's just going to come out so wrong. So we've got Ninja Turtle playing Why Not. Okay, to set the scene, Obsidian Front has just allied onto the Marmite Collective Noir War Deck at our request. Tora Bushida confronts his attacker.
Hi, Tony. That wasn't very nice of you. Ally has joined a war. Post-mail.
The last two war on us wasn't very nice of you.
Have you any idea how many contracts we denied after we made peace? Just wanted to let you know that our neutral standings are over, and after this ally request, it ain't over for a long time.
No, you never told me. Front was even prepared to take tower contract from you, as you asked, was on our agenda, and then you decked us once. And then once again. Last month we were at war, Tora. Did you forget?
Yes, we were?
You decked us.
Let me check.
And the month before that. Links to wars.
We did not. Nor did.
You did.
And now you helped the guys who fucked you from behind?
See, they really didn't.
And who are all bragging about how they owned you? You want me to show you their website? Have you been sleeping? Nor is the one who's been fucking with OF. Join the wars with FD, and we stand aside. LOL. Seriously?
Oh, they did own us. I heard the podcast.
If you want war, fine. But get your facts straight.
That's two S's, ladies and gentlemen. Go on.
How can you become allies towards people who avoid wars with you and help the ones who fucked you?
Tora, I can find our chat logs from the last two war where I asked what this was all about.
Seriously?
You said sorry, I had nothing to do with it.
Did you see any of Marmite's derbing the fights you had? Even one?
Yes, you can in the T3 fleet, to heck. One night when we had an engagement with Failed.
Huh? Show me the war report, because I call it BS.
Link's the war report.
Call me crazy, but this is 100% OF and FD. Mixed with Noir shit.
Link's a kill mail. Not a report, but people constant chasing people around during that war. And the war before that. Link's another kill mail.
I'm going to stop this useless convo. You should bend over some more for your friends from Noir.
Link's the third kill mail of what I'm assuming are lost mails.
Want me to show you 100x more Noir kills? You wanted war? Fine, so be it. But helping the ones who really fucked you big time? Disappoint. O/.
O/.
Disappointed!
Son of a bitch, get this sick son of a bitch, get him off my show, and get him off now!
Yeah, I gotta give a nod to Kingblade here. Tora Bushida should really write him a thank you mail, because he kindly covered up all of the grammar and spelling errors that make Tora look like a raving lunatic.
Oh, it was terrible.
God, you guys are killing me.
So, why not? How do you feel bent over on our podcast? Feel good?
Well, I have 3 hours of sleep before work, and to be honest, I don't think I can sleep after this. I'm going to stay up all night just laughing.
No, it was great having you on. Why not? You have to come back again. Really hopefully under not the circumstances where Marmite is being annoying, we have something else to talk about.
Well, to be honest, it's actually good for our lines. I mean, for some reason, and it's weird because, as some people don't know, we are an industrial alliance. But every time we end up in war like this and see the pressure, for some reason, our numbers and active members just double up. And, I mean, it's not PvPers showing up. It's actually industrial people jumping into evil frigates or whatever just to take part. So it's awesome. And it helps.
You guys consider yourselves an industrial alliance?
We are an industrial alliance. Seriously, we are. I mean,
I think that's surprising because, like, I've seen your fleets. They're huge and they're well-fit, and you guys run, like, 0-0 level doctrines and all this kind of stuff.
Well, half the fleet is miners and PvEs in the database. They don't fight normally. You see them mission run or mining and do industrial parts. I mean, more than half of the fleet are industrials, and they only take part in PvP when the war's on. And it's a concept we've been building up. I mean, it's been my vision all the time to have PvPs and PvEs work together, and it seems to work quite well, actually.
I wish more industrial alliances would take that approach, because usually they just don't. They feel like somehow PvP is a personal affront to them. You guys have sort of, like, embraced it head-on and have been really impressive in the results.
We also have the downsides. I mean, we have a lot of as soon as people reach a certain level of PvP experience, they tend to drop the industrial side of it and the PvP side of it and then LPV side of it. And then you see them after 2, maybe 3 years in Alliance, they move on. Because now they reach a state where they really want to try something bigger. And they join the Nultek Alliances, or Shadow Cartel, or whatever. And I don't blame them. I don't blame any one of them. But that's what we're seeing. That's why we're having a really hard time to move on. We're constantly living in that same state where, yes, we go down, we own Serenity for a while, but we're not kind of getting to the right level.
I actually can identify with that a lot, actually, on ours half. We actually had pretty good retention lately, but for like a period, it almost felt like Noir was a stepping stone for other larger groups. We couldn't keep people in. They were going to like Pandemic Legion or Black Legion or the heavy hitters in 0-0 or heavy hitters in Low Sec, and they weren't staying here so we could become that heavy hitter. And it's been a challenge, because it's hard when you're a good corp, but you're not a large corp. You get a lot of people that are attracted to what you're doing, but like you said, they crave more. And if you're not at that critical mass to provide it, sometimes they lose patience, and that just makes things even harder. You get sort of trapped in this loop.
True. And to be honest, regarding the industrial part, I mean, I have burned down God knows how many FCs within our alliance. I mean, because I have to cope up with the PvEs and the industrial people. Because they are not, as I said, they're not fully PvPers, so there's a lot of the stuff in fights, and I mean, we don't want to see a Drake in our fleet, and having the discussion with everyone every time we have a fleet up going is rough, especially for the skilled FCs.
Yeah, I can only imagine. That's a personal peeve for me. Not Drake's necessarily, but like if we're running armor and people bring up shield ships as options, like, come on, you see what I'm trying to do here.
Exactly.
Well, why not? It was a pleasure having you on, and I'm glad that we're able to work together, and I am proud to know that there is at least one industrial alliance in the game that I would be happy to call a friend.
Thank you.
That's it for us, guys. Go to declarationsofwar.com to participate in a show poll. Leave a comment or put in a nation. This is a listener-supported podcast. We really appreciate all your support, both in real-life money and ISK.
You help pay for Turtles editing. You help pay for new equipment. You guys help keep me fed when I was out of work. I love you guys for that. You can reach Noir via our public channel, CafeNoir.com, and plan to join us on our forums at noirmerch.com. We are aggressively recruiting new people because once we get out of the Alliance tournament, it's back to contract work, baby, and we're going to hit that hard. Good hunting, listeners.
WNMG 91.5, we're going to the request lines now. Tora Bushido writes in with a dedication to Why Not and all of Obsidian Front. He says, love you, baby. Miss you, baby. Won't you come back home?